Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to the Starting Five Podcast on SB Nation Grizzly Bear Blues. I am the one P Shark.
I am at underscore Scott Lee on Twitter as usual, but we're no longer melting, guys. No longer melting. So we'll get into that in a second. But you know, I tried to do a little play on words right there.
Well, why are you doing that? I'm back on Dylan Brooks Island watching the sunset. This you got Trev, man, the corner man. What's good, everybody?
What's good, y'all? The big man at Tab Shakir, aka Tevin the Rat, aka Let's Get It Going. Let's go, y'all. We ready, man.
for sure. Well, y'all are missing our fifth member. Of course, y'all know y'all can follow him at It's Really Sheedy. But we got a nice, I ain't gonna say replacement, but a nice fill in for him. And we like to call him Memphis Legend around here. Y'all know him as a host of Jason and John Show on 99 ESPN, Mr. Jason Smith. How you doing?
Man, very happy to be here. Very honored that you gentlemen would have me to fill such big shoes. I'm going to try to do my best Tyus Jones impression. Back up, right? Going to be put into a starter role here today. Try to do my best for you gentlemen. I appreciate y'all having me.
That means my man ain't turning the ball over, and I'm cool with that.
That's right. I'm not turning nothing over. I'm taking good shots. I got a nice little floater. So
I'll take it. I'll take it because I knew that was a shot at me. It's fine.
We're gonna keep it going, man. Jason is definitely an honor, man. For real. We talk about, you know, you coming replacing, like, nah, you're a legend in our eyes. And I know once me and Sharky started this thing, you know, in the media, we saw you behind the Tigers game a few years ago. It was like, man, it'd be so dope to have you on. So to finally have that happen is kind of like a dream come true. So for one, we like to give you your flowers, your inspiration for all of us that's on with you now, that's gonna be listening, and we want to say thank you for real. Like,
man, I very much appreciate those words. I'm humbled by them. And listen, I've had to come sort of around and come to grips with the fact that, you know, whether it's been in the newspaper industry or now over in radio, guys, I mean, you guys know the deal. There are very few mainstream spots when it comes to us black folks, when it comes to people of color, period, whether you're talking about brown folks, black thing folks, any on. So what I've come to realize that when you're in one of those spots, man, it is a great responsibility, and you do have an obligation, man, to hold down that spot so you can keep that door open, so you can get this thing where it's supposed to be, and especially in a city like Memphis, and especially covering some of the topics we are. So I consider it a great responsibility. And just happy to have that I could inspire a few, if any at all, that I could inspire a few, not just hopefully inspire, but maybe hopefully help move up that platform as we've, you know, try to do for a few, and you hope that few becomes a great many. So anyway, that was a long answer to say, man, thank you for having me, and thank you for the kind words, brother. Really is.
We definitely gonna talk more about that. Just having that representation, especially being in a city like Memphis. You know, to be able to put a black face, you know, to you, and then to be like the man that you are, like really humble, laid back, but you got that action. But they call you Wash, man. What's up with that?
They call that. Say it again. They call what?
They call you Wash. They call me Wash, man. What's up with that?
I call myself Wash, man. Over there, because I'm not. Listen, when it comes to that Tiger basketball beat that I was on for 6 years, man, where you got to be, You know, you got to be plugged in at all times. You consider it now where they got me on the radio and just, hey, kind of saying what I think, I feel. Don't have to be as plugged in. Don't have to be like a cop on that beat and have everything as soon as it happens. I call myself a little washed from that. It's nice to be able to unplug every now and then. But the other great thing I'll tell you that about moving on the radio real fast is that as that Tiger beat writer at the Commercial Appeal, well, that was my box. That's what folks asked me about. That's what I was technically supposed to be an expert on. And but I watched the Grizzlies. I'm a fan of the Grizzlies, and had covered the Grizzlies during my college days for Sports Ticker. So back to the point, man, I get into the radio, get a chance to kind of break out of that box, and that becomes, you know, a great honor and a great challenge. So yeah, man, no, I'm watched in the sense of, man, trying to break news and be first on this stuff. But man, if you want an opinion or two on these Grizzlies and these Tigers, I got you all day long on those. I got you all day long.
And you from Memphis, right?
Yeah, well, not born here, but raised here. My dad moved us here in the early 80s, actually to work at Channel 5 with Jack Eden and Jarvo, and at that time, Harold Grader. My dad was in the television game, so we moved here early 80s. I'd been born in Jefferson City, Missouri. We had moved down to Florida for my dad to take a TV job down here. Then he got a job early 80s at Channel 5, WMC-TV, right there on Union. We were living in Midtown, and since the second grade, from Bruce to Roselle to then Snowden Middle School, then on to White Station, it's been Memphis. So everything but born here, certainly raised here, and it's home, man, and has been for the majority of my life, brother. Now 45, pushing on 46 years old in October.
Right on. And you got into like the media from like watching your dad, right?
I did. My intention, long story short, was to go into television like my father. But I got over to the University of Memphis after blowing it at TSU, got back into school late, and about 5 years, quite frankly, after like a 5-year hiatus between TSU and getting back in, and decided, okay, I'm going to follow my dad's footsteps, try to do television. I love sports. I'd be a sports reporter, and got over there, took a media writing class from then an adjunct professor by the name of Jerome Wright, who was working over the Commercial Appeal. And he, at that time, newspapers, you know, they were flourishing still. It was before the big fallout, before advertisers pulled, before the internet really just changed the game in terms of us having to go to paywalls, everything like that. But the point was that it was still the land of the plentiful. And so he talked me into a newspaper career. And I was lucky enough, after getting out of Memphis in 02, the University of Memphis, graduating there, to get a full-time job 03 covering preps for the CA. And so it was a different sort of, it was a different medium for me. My dad was still was back in TV at the time. He had changed from sportscaster and sports director at Channel 3 to now an investigative reporter. He had gotten out of sports at a time that I was getting in. And yeah, 2003, I got full-time over at this Commercial Appeal covering preps. It was my way in. It was right timing because one of their two prep writers, imagine that newspaper at that time had, man, a full staff. The sports department took over a whole floor of the Commercial Appeal. And like we said, it was the land of the plentiful. But man, did that change in the 13 years I was there. But back to the point, yeah, 03, start full-time covering high schools. Did that for 7 years. And then 7 years in, they promoted me to the Tiger basketball beat. So there you have it. Done, you know, Grizzlies and stuff for Sports Ticker during my time at the Daily Helmsman, back at the University of Memphis. Yeah, man. Yeah, back at the many a great one came through there. I'm low on that totem pole for all the names that came through that Helmsman. But, man, Candy Justice and the folks over there, man, did a ton for me. You know, that's where I found out, hey, I can handle this newspaper thing on a day-to-day basis, because we were 4 out of 5 days a week. 4 out of 4 days a week, we felt like a daily newspaper where you had to grind and come up with new story ideas. So it was great preparation for what would be a 13-year newspaper career for me.
All right. So as I prep my question again, you know, Jason, definitely appreciate you for being on. You know, I believe between like all of us, we were definitely, you know, always tuned in to 92.9 between the hours of 12 to 2. So, you know, thank you for being on. But my question to you, like, what is it about radio that you seem to like and love? You know, you've talked about your upbringing, you know, coming through, you know, the newspaper, through the Daily Helmsman. So, like, what is it about radio that you seem to like, you know, seem to have a very true passion about?
I think it's, you know, what I mentioned earlier is getting a chance to sort of branch out and not just be one thing, you know, on radio, at least for us here in this town. And we've seen it. We've seen a shift. Like when I started in the newspaper game a while back, you know, what was, you know, what was clear and what the number one beat was Tiger basketball. But as the Grizzlies have grown, not from going just the Western Conference final to Core Four to now with Ja Morant, like that desire, that thirst, that hunger for Grizzlies has changed. And what being on radio does allows me to weigh in on both, still sort of go back at times to my high school roots, because again, so many times when we're talking about basketball and Hoop City, when all the prospects that come out of Memphis, you know, these stories start at that grassroots, at that high school level. So the thing with radio to answer your question is I get a chance to be a little bit broader, right? I get a chance to speak on a few more things. And listen, it was a challenge after 13 years of newspapers going into radio. Other than being a guest on other folks' show, I didn't know the first thing about doing a 1 hour radio show, much less a 3 hour radio show, and filling that time. And guys, how many words 3 hours of radio actually is? I remember that first day and getting to the end of that third hour and literally on air asking, are we done yet? Because I had exhausted all my topics about 2 hours ago, and not knowing a dang thing about the art of the resetting your top story and going back through it and just you know, picking stories and all that. So there were a great many challenges that first day that I didn't, to be honest with you, didn't know if I was going to be cut out for it. But as time has gone on, and as I've found it to be, you know, just as an effective, if not more so, platform to again be able to reach a broader number of people, because again, in that newspaper business, you know, those number of eyes, they were dwindling. And so again, not to say that radio is the greatest medium, but it's certainly one that has remained strong throughout throughout the course of time, and history has proven that. So got passionate about it because I realized how many folks were listening, especially you'd be surprised in a market outside the top 50, at least from a television market outside the top 50 in Memphis, how thick it is in terms of the radio listening audience in Memphis. Like, we grew up listening to George Lapidus and Bobby OJ, right? And some, whether it was sports or whether it was Bobby OJ on the morning radio show, we grew up, radio was part of our routine. And I didn't realize how much of a routine it was for us until I got over into it and realized, man, there it feels like there are just as many folks listening as there were reading your stories in the newspaper. So again, greater responsibility, because again, I'm on more topics now. And guys, we're not, you know, again, we're not just talking NBA and college football and college basketball. I mean, we're talking issues for nearly a year there. You know, we had to become epidemiologists because the sports were gone. And we're having to, again, fill a three-hour radio show. So I say all that to say, you know, I've become passionate about it, hopefully. Number one, as a professional, like, you're going to throw everything you've got into it. But number two is my eyes have been open to just how effective a medium it is and frankly, how big a responsibility it is. So that's the part about radio is that, man, especially in Memphis, Tennessee, you find out with as many folks that are listening as there are, man, it's a great responsibility. And like I said, I get to weigh in on a number of topics, and not just sports, but a lot of times it's over in news or whatever else. So I've had fun. I'm now 6 years in, believe it or not. That's what's hard to believe is I look up and I'm now, you know, in October, it'll be 6 years for us as a radio show. And yeah, man, to have gotten this deep in it, I would have never have dreamed that it would have gone as well as it has. Because again, it's a complete transformation for me, just in terms of professional career from what I was used to.
And we speaking of legends, man, you brought up a legend. Rest in peace, and our deepest condolences to the family of Bobby OJ, man. Definitely a legend in the city.
Amen.
For sure. No, Reese passed away. I know Shark had a question, but real quick, when people say radio's dying, that's something that frustrated me. When people would say radio's dying as working in radio. Do you feel like it's dying, or what's your thoughts on it?
Not at all. See, again, I come from a background of newspapers where I watched it. And not to say that newspapers have died. I think they've done a solid job of sort of stabilizing. But whether it was circulation-based or whatever it was, those numbers dwindled. You could see it. The number of clicks and everything else, everything going down as people realize. Listen, newspaper, very simple. For far too long, newspapers were giving the information away for free on the internet while trying to sell a paper,
okay? And what people realize, well, what the heck do I need a subscription for to the edition, the handheld edition of the newspaper, if I'm going to read it online for free? And for far too long, places like Commercial Appeal gave it away for free. Folks got used to getting their news for free. And then you come in 10 years later trying to drop paywalls on folks that have gotten their news for free for 10 years. Like we were talking about routine earlier and radio being a part of people's routine. People were in a routine of getting it for free. With radio, it's always been free, right, for the most part. And that's the part about it is they haven't lost anybody. And so advertisers, unlike with newspapers, the radio could show their advertisers, hey, we still got this many people listening to us. And so, no, it's never gone away. For whatever reason, like we said, radio is a part of people's routines in Memphis. And man, it hasn't gone anywhere. And in fact, you can make an argument that it's stayed just as strong as it had been. It's the advertising strong. And so what that's allowed them to do is, man, flip some music stations into sports stations. And for us over at 929, it's been a great success here locally, especially, you know, from those hours of 9 to 6 when we're all local.
Charton?
Yeah, so I hate to, I'm not going to say exactly what happened, but the day I met you was the day after you made an announcement on air that certain artists would be at a big event in Memphis.
Oh, here we go. I knew it was coming.
So I wanted to, my question is, like, how do you determine, like, how credible a source is on, like, actually spreading out information?
Well, it can be tough. And I'll tell you one thing, especially when it comes to that Memphis basketball beat, and we're seeing it now with set aside Memphis Madness performers, whether it's covering recruiting or who Penny Hardaway is going to hire. You know, one thing one day can be completely different the next. And folks that are covering that program right now, as closely as they are, the beat writers, everybody else, you can see how difficult that can be. You know, that year, 2018, was Penny's first Memphis Madness. And so it was everywhere. Who are going to be the performers? How big is it going to be? There were rumors everywhere circulating pretty good. And I had it felt like on pretty good authority from FedEx Forum, from an official down at FedEx Forum at the time, that, you know, some non-disclosure agreements were being signed and that somebody big was coming. And the funny thing was, at the time that was happening, what you heard from just about every other media member was, oh, I'm hearing it too. What I'll say about that situation is that in the end, a great lesson was learned by me, because in the end, I was the person that had to answer for it. When those guys didn't show up, JT, by that time, I'm throwing Drake out there. And it didn't matter that, and a lot of people, you know, would try to harp on this, I won't. Didn't matter that a lot of the other performers that we had said were coming did show up. It's the ones you got wrong. And what you figure out very quickly, guys, in your media career, is it doesn't matter how many things you got right. That one thing, right, one thing or one mistake when it comes to your professional career, your reputation, to your point, your credibility, one thing can unravel it all. And so for a great many people, when Drake and Justin Timberlake didn't show up that night, not falsely, you know, not written it, but reported on the radio, when they didn't show up that night, my credibility was gone. And that was the lesson I learned, that in my, you know, whether it was at one point thirst to be right, thirst to get the big scoop on that story, I got it wrong in the end. My source had it wrong. And in the end, I couldn't blame the source. In the end, I'm the one to answer for it. And so the lesson was mine to learn. And listen, I've been asked about this a couple times, you know, would you go back and undo it? And it's sort of like my, you know, my college career at TSU. I had to, at that point, you know, especially early on in my radio career, I think I thought, you know what, I've reached a point now where I'm getting it all. I don't have anything to worry about, man. I don't need to double down and double and triple check like I had as a newspaper reporter. And I to that point, like I said, I had folks telling me at the end, no. Even folks like Curtis Gibbons saying, brother, you, no, man, you want to pull this one back in. At the end, I didn't believe Curtis. Okay, at the end, I didn't believe people that were trying to tell me, no, brother. And literally, Curtis Gibbons, I respect him to this day for me. He tried to, he was saying, brother, I'm trying to, as a professional in your career, and I've watched you and everything else, I'm trying to tell you this one ain't happening. And at the end, I had gotten so big-headed about it, guys, to be real honest with you, and hand before God, and so big-headed about it that I thought even Curtis was lying to try to throw me off. And so, again, long story short, I got the big head, thought at that point, I had been so right on everything with Tubby Smith. I must be right on this too. I got this one source at FedEx Forum that's guaranteed me JT's coming, and boy did I blow it. But the lesson learned is what I found out too after that was who's with me, right? Who was still with me, and who very quickly that I might have thought beforehand was cool with me and with me. Who very quickly I was that clown to. And all of my, to that point, 13, 14 year professional career didn't mean a damn thing to them. The one night, the worst night of my career for them was enough to sort of put the tombstone on me and point to this guy as a failure in this business. And to this day, that's something I got to live with, right? There is no fighting that. And so long story short, yeah, man, it was the worst night of my career because You can get on the night of, you can get it right on the build up, you know, to that point in your career, you can get it all right. But boy, can a mistake haunt you. And I'll tell you what, it still does to this day. It still does to this day. Because again, it's something that Penny Hardaway shouldn't have had to answer for afterwards, right? He's putting together his first Madness. The last thing you want him doing in his first really big event as a college basketball coach is having to answer questions about, hey, why didn't Drake JT show up? Did you try to get those guys? Were they on the docket? So again, it was unfair to Penny, and it was unfair to the folks who did go down to Madness hoping for Drake and JT.
Kudos to you for standing on that though, right? You know, some people.
Have to. There's too many guys. It was a lesson learned, and if I don't eat it up every time, then I try to pass off. Oh, that was. That was my sources, and it just blew. I promise you, no. Then it's not real, and I'm not out here trying to sell fake guys. For the times in my careers, and there've been many more that I've made mistakes. Hopefully, my mistake can be one that a story or a testimony that others can learn from and not make that same one. And I'm just gonna be honest with you guys. For us, for African Americans, for Black folks in this business. Like, you don't want to be in my shoes that night, making that mistake and potentially unraveling, right, the good and the credibility that you built. I'm going to keep it real because I don't want any of you guys, I don't want anybody, quite frankly, whether you're Black, white, brown, whatever it is, nobody should be in that position. So by all means, learn from me.
You hear me, Jason?
What's
that?
That will be a reason. That will be a reason.
That was the 30 for 30 on that thing.
All right, so let's transition from, I guess, back then into now. Through the pandemic, right? Like, you had to create content for a 3-hour show. You and John. For us, it was like we still had to make content, but throughout the whole process, like, we were able to be more confident in what we were doing. Was it something throughout the pandemic that, you know, helped you out? And, you know, what did you learn through the pandemic as a person, as a man, and in media?
Well, a couple of things, to be honest with you, is that, you know, I think what we learned through the pandemic is that if we're going to be a successful show, and we've been told this beforehand, but that it needed to be about us, not about, you know, when John and I first started the show, we wanted to beat everybody on guests. We wanted to book the show in a way that Memphis had not seen. And so from that standpoint, you know, draw folks in. We thought that'd be great, right? Whether it's celebrities or coaches or whatever, hey, just book the show, right? Especially as I'm trying to figure out radio. You had John coming from the producer side with Jeff Hawkins having produced his show, but really first time as a full-time host. So first thing we're going to do is outwork everybody, get great guests, bring them in. But what we were told while we were doing that too, And very successfully, I'll say early on, because that formula seemed to be working early on as folks got, but we were told that, listen, it can't be about the guests, it's got to be about y'all. It's got to be about your chemistry, it's got to be about, you know, not just what you guys talk about, but the way you present it. We talk about bits, whatever else. It's got to be about you and the structure of your show. And I say all that to say, to your point on the question about the pandemic, when that hit, and there were really no guests to get on sports because sports weren't happening. And so, what, you know, as hard as it was for us to, like I suggested earlier, you know, to become epidemiologists, try to study the pandemic, what's going on, what we should be doing. As hard as it was for us to do that, what we found out was that, listen, without sports, this has got to be about us. And it's frankly where it was almost like, you know, everything was taken away. And so it's just you and in this case, me and John in a room together. And to your point, you got to fill 3 hours. And so what you find is a greater dependence, kind of like you guys, like you mentioned, a greater dependence on yourself because you got nowhere else to turn. There is no great guest to go get because the sports are done. And so you could become a news show if you want. But again, people tuned into us for a distraction. If they wanted to hear, I'll be real honest with you, if they wanted to hear epidemiology, what's going on with COVID, they weren't coming to us for that. They were coming to us to be the distraction that we usually are as a sports show. And so from that standpoint, we had to develop a greater dependence on ourselves. And in that exercise, right, in doing that all those days through the pandemic, we got stronger. And not that we came out of it and said, you know what, we don't have to book great guests anymore. No, we still want to book great guests. But what we've learned is, I'd be real honest with you, Brad Carson, our program director, was right. He was the one that told us early on, it can't be about this year after year, day after day, about great guests. It's got to be about you guys, the chemistry, the structure of your show, how you present it. And again, when you take all the extras out of it and the sports and in this case, the meat, we had to eat still. And what we realized is, man, we're the meat. Like, it, again, whether it's our chemistry or our back and forth, it made us stronger in terms of our reliance and our dependence on ourselves, man. And so it raised our confidence level. And man, my gosh, you take sports, you give sports back to or you give food back to a starving man right after he's been without it for a few months. Then we're not just energized again. We're grateful as heck to have it all back. And so, you know, but in that process, like we said, we've gotten stronger because even having it all back, we realized it's still about us. It's still about, you know, having fun on the show. It's still about having a good chemistry, not taking ourselves too seriously. That's been a big part of it, because I think when you do, you can lead yourself to some disappointment. So long story short, man, yeah, that's what it did for us. Was it grew our belief in ourselves, in our confidence level in ourselves, and our dependence and reliance on ourselves to get the job done. You know.
You got a favorite non-player and player interview?
Favorite non-player and player interview. That's a fantastic question. I got to say, anytime I get to talk to Supreme Bay, and John has developed a relationship with him, I was more, again, when he was shining at Memphis playing, I was covering high school sports. So I didn't cover CDR during his time at Memphis. But getting to know him, and I guess, and here's the thing. From the outside looking in, you'd say, man, what is he on now? Like, what you know, and he's, you know, we've seen his name come up in this, you know, investigation now and everything else into, you know, stuff that we saw Tony Allen, those other guys, some of those NBA guys involved with. Set all that to the side. Like, Supreme is not motivated in the same way a lot of us are. And so anytime that I can get outside, you know, I can be taken outside a box, things I expect to say, and dude, he's a education anytime you get to talk to him. So just in that sense, kind of not knowing where Supreme is going to take us, any chance we get to talk to him. And I guess I would still consider him athlete in that sense. He's still that, you know, he's former player now, but no, man, Supreme has kind of, while it's kind of spacey with some of the interviews, and like I said, you don't know necessarily where it's going to go because you get all into the universe and everything else. It is always entertaining and enlightening. And then, man, I don't know if that's my non-player, if that's my player with where Supreme Bay is, with where he is now, but then, I'm trying to think, you know, it's in terms of Grizzlies, like anytime you can get Ja on, right. And we were able to for media day, those are always fun. He's Ja's a fun interview because it feels like he's always going to say something. I just wonder how long he's going to be like that. I remember, you know, Jaren early on, first couple of years, right? Happy to be here, wants to do everybody. But after a while, you do all those interviews and you realize, you know what, I don't necessarily have to say nothing. So I wonder if that's always going to be Ja, the one we get right now, that's saying all original material, you ain't never heard nothing like, or eventually does he become that guy that sort of develops a thick, you know, that, man, I don't have to tell y'all everything. I don't have to invent some new thought every time y'all ask me a question. But, I mean, those are some of them. You asked me, I might come up with a few later. You caught me on the spot with that one. That was a good question.
I mean, but still, like, it's going to take people like you to keep media interesting. Like, we know how it is at the end of the game. It's quiet as hell, and you can hear a pin drop, you know. But when a player comes, they ask the questions. But, and it's kind of like the same old. But it's like for you and John, it's like y'all create dope content. So it's like as long as y'all keep doing y'all thing, the players are, you know, that's where I'm at with it. What you think?
I'll tell you one, but just this thought, not non-player, but he taught that they taught me something too, that when they came in, A-Ball and MJG, when they came in, we've had Fly, we've had Gangsta Black, some of those rap interviews I've enjoyed the most. I mean, we've had Neil deGrasse Tyson on, but A-Ball and MJG, when I tried to play the old, man, music ain't what it used to be card, the old that I thought, you know, have sort of being around their age, closer to their age, that they would relate to and be like, oh man, you're right, it ain't like it used to be, you know. So sometimes you can do that with those older players and be like, and get on that, you know, find something that and get to a conversation. But it was MJG first that said, no, see, we don't hate on any of the new, because what we realize is it's all a part of the evolution. I think I was asking them about the Migos and how they can just kind of make a sound rather than have to write, whether you write a verse or whatever else, whether it feel like, to me, old school, hey, there's a real skill to that verse, right? And making that thing timing-wise match out like MJG used to do in his verses. But to his point, I'm asking them, man, them sounds, the Migos, like, that ain't the same as what y'all did. This music, his point was, no, man, what you're doing is a form of hating, young brother. Asking him about those, that's just basically wrapping up with how he had schooled me to something. You go into these interviews sometimes thinking how it's going to go or have an impression of where you think it might go, and it's those ones that, you know, they educate you almost. In that case, MJG educated a brother like me, said, hey, man, you kind of slick hate. Don't hate on the evolution of music. And again, like he had said, if we were any part of that, you got to respect it, whether you like the music or not. And so, like I said, it's those interviews that maybe make you think a little bit different way, man, that are the most fun for me.
Yeah, so let's take it to the court, man. I got to ask you this one. So, of course, like I said, you watch your dad, you know, do his thing. And, of course, you have your kid watching you do your thing. When you're out watching a certain player and you see their dad come up, which dads do you prefer? The quiet Dale Curry type or the in-your-face LeVar Ball, T. Morant, you know, the words? Like, which dads do you prefer to, I guess, cover since you're watching their child?
So T. Morant or Dale?
Yeah, so which dads do you prefer? Like, the more quiet type? Like, when you in the stands, like, doing your thing, watching and, you know, analyzing, but you see their dads, you know what I'm saying? Do you prefer the quiet type, like the Dale Currys, or do you prefer, like, the dads that's going to be in your face? Oh, my child going to do boom, 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 you know?
It's funny, you know, covering recruiting, the dads that were outspoken or always calling me to tell me how good their kid was, after a while, those were the dads that weren't the most fun. Even if they had a kid that was great, man. You know what I'm saying? Because it was just like, oh man, again, you know, again with this, we know, you know, your kid's getting the love. We're, you know, especially in a newspaper, we're trying to get some love for somebody else to find the next big one. But there were times where I thought, at least covering them, there could be overbearing dads or dads who I thought wanted it more than the kid. In that case, a lot of times you spoil, how much fun is the kid having? Or are you trying to live your dreams through this kid? So covering them, I always had that sort of disdain for dads that I ran across that I thought were like that. That said, I'm sitting up here as my kid's 8 years old. He's playing a little bit of grassroots AAU, whatever you want to call it. We're talking about second grade teams, but I'm finding as we go on these things, man, I'm in the stands yelling and everything else, and trying not to become that dad probably that I had some disdain for. It's a little bit different when the kid is yours. You didn't reach your hoop dreams, and now all of a sudden that ball's in his hands. He's 8 years old, and you say, hey, man, don't be like me out there. You know, now you're going to pass JV at White Station. We going to the league. You know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to back myself up. But then what I'm also telling myself, too, is how many T. Morants can there be? Like, Ja told us that T was his biggest hater, right? And here's the thing. That don't work for everybody. Because if you and thank God it did for Ja Morant, but here's my point. Like, if I was that hard on my little kid at this point, I'd be worried about burnout. I'd be worried about, again, if it means that much to my dad, well, when I have a disagreement with my dad, I'll just turn it off. You know what I'm saying? And I guess my point of being so hard on him that I turn him away for it, that he doesn't have a passion or a love for it. So I answer your question by saying this, that as I've gotten more into it, I've probably become more of the outspoken kind of dad. Not saying my kid's great. But certainly during games, man, I find myself yelling, being that outspoken parent. But again, having covered some of those dads, the best advice I've gotten is, man, just let it be fun for them. Because the likelihood is my kid, Lord knows, with the little bit of athleticism, next to none, I handed down, the next to no size, my kids, you know, good chance it's going to be at this level where we have our fun, and then it's going to be about life. And so from that standpoint, yeah, man, I'm just having fun with it and trying not to be that overbearing dad that wants it more than his kid. But I'll still take Smooth Dale. I'll take Dale, who watches it, you know, kind of. Now, Steph's accomplished a lot, so it's a little bit easier for him. But I still like to be that dad that could be as cool as him when your kid's out there shining and the GOAT the way his son is.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, to echo that, you know, it's easy. I'm going to say it's easy, but, you know, you can kind of see why T. Morant is the way he is. You can see why Dale Curry is the way he is. When you know your son is, like, you know, top five, top 10 guys in the league, in the NBA, it's like, I mean, I could just kind of sit back, you know, watch my son put up 30, we'll take this dub. Like, it's kind of easy to do that instead of, like, being that guy that's yelling at the ref, yelling at the players, and your son putting up, like, 5 points a game. Like, that, how that works.
I wondered early on if LeVar was doing Lonzo, especially, a disservice in terms of the way he was, you know, taking it to a whole nother level. You putting an X on your back almost. I realized, you know, that's a whole nother level once you're up to that degree. But, you know, we've seen him talks with the Lakers and Magic and all, tone it down quite a bit, because I think, yes, they were good, and you've done a hell of a job raising them. You got to, you know, to get them to this point. You did what you said you were going to do. You don't need to tell nobody anymore. The proof's in the pudding, and you're telling somebody so much. You got them on such a high level in terms of you're putting an X on their back almost every night in terms of the competition, wanting to go out and show them that they're not the guys you're claiming that they are. So especially when it becomes, you know, you start to take away from some of the competitive advantage, it feels like, man, just let them go out there and ball.
Speaking of putting X's on backs, the Tigers and the Grizzlies have went with this mantra of they want all the smoke, right? So with that being said, what does Jason Smith think? Would the Grizzlies have to win a championship, or, you know, go to the finals, or make it to the, you know, second round, whatever, in order for us to be like, okay, we achieved our, you know, our goal, whatever, you know, with them running out of smoke? What is that level of, okay, I can be okay with it? You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm asking?
Okay. Listen, my whole thing's always been as ways I was ready. If you're gonna talk it, you gotta walk it, and if you're gonna put it out there, you gotta be able to take it when it comes back. So listen, I know folks got caught up in Golden State and taking whoop that trick and some of the way Clay responded, Steve Kerr talking about the code, and it was. Golden State got really uppity, no question, during that series and throughout the playoffs. But that said, you know, the Grizzlies are talkers. Penny Hardaway, Memphis, they're talkers. And I think too, that is, you know, that's 2022, you know, and especially confident players. Now again, in most cases, Ja has backed it up. And if you're going to back up the talk, you get all the credit that goes with it. But a lot of times what we find out is and there's one team that wins a championship. And so in the end, and what you come to find out a lot of times is that talk gets thrown back in you. Folks have kept receipts. And listen, if you're the kind who that is motivation for you, as it has been, as it clearly is for Ja, all right, that's your, you got to set that to the side, because I literally think part of Ja's DNA is finding those slights, right? It's the Michael Jordan, it's the Tom Brady in him that goes out and takes the smallest of slights from some fool with 20 followers. But for him, it's motivation, and it leads to not just big game that night, but big season. They're chip on the shoulder type guys like that, that have greatness in them, that can take that stuff and use it. But I've always been one that you undersell and over deliver. And so from that standpoint, again, when you want all the smoke, if you're not delivering a championship or something nearly as big, right, or something your city's not seen before, there's always going to be some that say, okay, well, that ain't the smoke you were talking about. And so my whole thing is, man, you talk all day long, but you better be prepared to back it up in a championship way, or at some point it's going to be thrown back in your face. And here's the key. When it's thrown back in your face, you can't act like you're offended. You can't act like, oh, man, what you mean? Like, how could they do that to us? Because again, the way I was taught, no, man, you put that out there, you dish that out. So you got to be able to take it as well. There was a little bit of that with Draymond that I didn't understand. This little bit of Draymond that you want to buy in. Oh, he's his own guy, doesn't care what anybody thinks about him, right? Walks to the beat of his own drum. But then he tries to criticize the Grizzlies crowd at some point, the same Draymond that's throwing the double birds to him. And so that's what I'm getting to. Well, man, I thought you were thick-skinned. And so from that stuff, Draymond's the perfect guy. If you're going to dish it out, you got to be able to take it too. And whether it's the Grizzlies, Draymond, Penny Hardaway, that's the thing. And listen, I think with Penny, you've seen it. Like from the first year where he's talking about, I see national championship with the talent we've got. You're not necessarily predicting one, but saying he could see it in the room. You've seen a sort of tone. Man, we just got to make the tournament. Like that's what most, again, coaches especially, take away the athlete, coaches especially sort of come to that realization that, you know what, it's better for me to undersell and overdeliver than to say I'm seeing national championships here. Let me just say we're going to get to the tournament, and then I'm overachieving. You know what I'm saying? So there's a bunch of different ways to play it. Clearly with the young guys these days, and you like the talking some. It's part of the reason why Ja is where he is. It's part of the reason why this Grizzlies team is so marketable. But again, in the end, if you're not winning the championships, remember that folks are going to come back with it and show you those receipts. And you can't get offended at that point. Can't get offended. Got to remember, you know, where a lot of it started.
So the brothers know I am a bandwagon Warriors fan, so I do have to ask a couple of questions pertaining to them. One, the new media. What do you think? Or do you think that's a thing as far as Draymond bringing up the new media versus the old media? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, listen, I actually like Draymond's the podcast. I like the way he breaks it down. I think there is a place, whether it's CJ, JJ Redick, there's a place for the athlete who can break it down in a way that we haven't gotten in the past. Now, that's not to say that every athlete can go up there and do it. You've got to be interesting. You've got to be able to relate the game in a way that we're not just seeing out here every day. So again, I don't think every team all of a sudden got a player that needs to have a podcast necessarily. I think the guys that will be compelling and interesting, those will sort of rise to the top. But listen, that it's a type of insight, right? It's always good if you can get players to weigh in on the game. We learn so much more on it than having all of us washed up types that barely made JV or some guy that never played the game breaking it down. I just think we can learn from a bunch of different ways. And listen, if we can have players providing that insight, we can call it new media. I call it good media in a lot of these instances. And so I've appreciated what Draymond has sort of added to it. I just think, a lot of times you gotta be careful, because some of those personal relationships in some of these areas where it's not a trained media deal, right? Because I will say there's a great deal in terms of being in terms of crossing lines, conflict of interest, that kind of thing. And as long as those personal relationships don't get in the way of your podcast, everything else, I think they're just as much media as anybody else, especially when they're providing educational insight on the game.
Right on. So I got two more questions, then we can definitely get to the Grizz. But one, Back in 2018, that's when I had my first, you know, Twitter debate with 92.9, and it was as far as me calling the Warriors, the 2018 Warriors, the greatest ever. Like I said, it was dialogue. It was, you know what I'm saying? One of the people actually sent me a message. I don't know if it was you or not, but y'all sent me a message and, you know, said thanks for the civil dialogue, because I guess, you know, y'all get a lot of tropes. But I'm here to ask you personally, who is the greatest team of all time?
The greatest team of all time?
NBA, yep.
Come on, bro. All those teams with Michael Jordan on it, bro.
So you know his answer.
You know his answer is the GOAT. Yeah. Come on, man.
He's a bull thing.
If you think about it, you got the GOAT on that thing. You have arguably the best ever rebounder in Dennis Rodman for the second half of those things. And one of the greatest point forwards, again, in Scottie Pippen, and a guy who, you know, by the end of it, was elite defensively. You know, you could put him up against anybody. And so, well, I mean, when you throw three of them like that out there, and then for the, you know, not losing one, think about everybody that didn't get a ring because of those teams, like Barkley and Malone and those guys, right? I mean, Gary Payton got one later with the Lakers, but not those Sonics didn't get one. Those, so many superstars. Patrick Ewing didn't get one because of Mike. Like, he kept so many. Reggie Miller didn't get one because of Mike. Kept so many superstars from getting them during that era and didn't lose one. I just, from a team standpoint, they had it all. I just have a hard time picking against those Bulls teams, man, because they could do it all, defend and score on you.
I feel you. So I'm going to have to listen in and call in the next time y'all have that debate again. We'll be talking for hours about that one. But
all right. I got one real quick. It'll be a nice one real quick. So, Jason, you talked there's a time that you've covered high school sports during your time here in Memphis. So, since we're on this talk about greatest and GOATs and things of that nature, who is the greatest high school prospect that you've covered here in Memphis?
Okay. NBA-wise, it's Thaddeus Young, who I covered from the beginning.
Oh, Mitchell.
Yes, sir.
At his draft party that night, and I think it was Stephen A. Smith that called and said he'd be going to Philadelphia. Ended up calling it right on that one. But from he had everything, left-handed, had the size. I mean, it was Thaddeus Young. Only thing he didn't do was win a state title. Those Liberty teams kept him, and Mitchell was loaded, man. They had a kid that went to Florida.
Oh, just now, I was a witness
on that squad. Ended up D1, and they ended up not winning. But in terms of NBA prospect, high school, Thad was the best. Now, the best high school player I ever covered, I gotta say, it was Joe Jackson. I mean, because listen, there's a part of me that still can't believe that Joe didn't make the league. I was that convinced, even at Joe's size, that there's no way a dude who basically averaged 30 for his entire career, freshman to senior season, one of the top scorers we've ever seen come through Shelby Metro, scored more points than Thad and all that. Again, my era of covering high school sports, I was convinced Joe was going to make the league as an Allen Iverson type, but just a guy because he had it all. He had the work ethic. He had the skills, he had the drive, and he was going to overcome this 5'10", 5'11", that basically had overcome all of his life, because Joe Jackson was that cold in high school. Like, there'd be times where White Station was down and Joe would just turn it on. By the end of it, he was sitting on somebody's shoulders, literally sitting on somebody's shoulders, just dunked on him. Like, he would take over games. And back then, and man, that senior season, when him and Chris Jones from Melrose, and I got to be honest, Chris had his number. Joe's
he did.
Team. Yep.
He did.
Chris was tired of Joe getting all the spotlight, was tired of Joe. And it was an Orange Mound thing, too, like Joe being from the Mound. Chris was at Melrose, but there was this built up, I can't stand you getting the limelight all the time. And so as cold as Joe was, and I would still hold him up there, Chris, his senior year by that time, had shown, dude, I'm not just a one of your rivals. Like, I can beat you and take your cookies, like they showed up at state. So Joe was still the best, but man, by the end of it, so many folks had grown so tired of Joe and so tired of the performances he had put on people. Bro, he had developed a hunger and a thirst in terms of some of his rivals that wanted to, you know, to take that back. And you got to give it was Jermaine Johnson ended up putting together a plan and knocking off White Station. I want to say that state title game. But yeah, man, to answer your great question, Thad was the best NBA prospect, but Joe was the was the best high school player I ever saw. He was unstoppable. Unstoppable.
Right.
Jeez, talk about a name, man. Great memories. Great memories. My last question for you, from you, Jason, is what advice would you give somebody that's either, A, looking to come into this industry, or B, you know, that's in the industry but still having trouble finding their voice?
Keep working. You know, and this is where you gentlemen know this gentleman. And I'm so proud of Anthony Sane, because and y'all, because much like y'all, and he refused to be denied, right? Sane started as a podcaster, said, look, I'll do this a different way. And he's broken into the mainstream media by doing what? By not taking no for an answer. And in the end, whether it's the entertainment industry, whether it's the whatever it is that you want to break through, it's that. It's having that drive and knocking on that door, not just once and then not just the next door and the next door, but coming back to that first one and hitting it again. And Sane's relentlessness, right, his wanting to break through and be a part of this thing and not going to be denied, got him there. And eventually, like, you know, we were happy to be a small part of that, because not long after he gets the, you know, he's coming in for us at number one as a guest. Then we get him a shot as a weekly host when we're out on vacation. And from that, Lord knows, would have been great if we could have hired him if there's another. But from that, he gets a full-time gig. And back to the point, here's a guy who did it a different way. He didn't need to go like the old school way with me, go to the journalism school over at Memphis or whatever. He cut out his own path. And so I use Sane as the example of that. Make your own path. You ain't got to do what everybody else is doing. You ain't got to do it the way they did it. If it's good and you are relentless about your craft and where you're trying to get to, brother, you can make the path on your own. It's like just taking a machete and cutting down everything that's in front of you. And he is the perfect example of how you can get into this media game and not have done it the way these so-called media folks think you need to do it. Penny Hardaway is an example of that, of not doing it the way the old school college basketball coach has done it, right? Showing you there's a different way to skin that cat. That'd be my advice, brother, for anybody trying to break through. You know, don't worry about that first podcast that only had this many views. Think about that next one that you're doing, and then that next one, and it's the consistency and the keep coming back and the keep knocking on those doors that's eventually, man, going to kick in the door for you. And I promise you, so what happens is people see that work, they respect it, and then sooner or later, God puts the right people in your life to give you that opportunity, and then, bam, you're looking up and you're working full-time in the business that at one point maybe you thought, oh, man, that door will never open for me. It's that consistency, man, and that relentlessness. Sane's a great example of it, of just how, brother, we can get into this game, this so-called new media. It's out there for us, and our voices, guys, y'all's voices, Sane's, they need to be heard. There is an audience for that, and so that's my advice, brother, is just, man, just keep at it. Don't get discouraged. If this is truly in your heart and your passion, brother, get there, because that door is there. It's just a matter of you kicking it in.
Thank you, sir.
I promise y'all, we're going to talk about the draft. We just having good vibes right here. Just having
we got a legend on, man. This is going to be an on-air show, man. It's
an organic show, so just bear with us. We will get to the draft for those wondering.
That's it for me, man. Shark, you got any more? I mean, of course, I got 1,000 more questions, but I don't think you
gotta get to the draft.
I got 1,000. Trust me, I'm ready. I'm locked and loaded. But.
Yeah, that was a worry right there, and that's definitely something we definitely consistency is key, is our motto. So, yeah, what you just said is literally going.
That's forward. It, bro. That's it.
But to move forward with the draft, though, as you know, the Grizzlies got 4 players with 3 draft picks. End up trading DeAnthony Melton in the process. So let's start with trading DeAnthony Melton. What are your thoughts? How you feel about DeAnthony Melton getting traded? Do you think we got proper replacement for him, or you think we will get proper replacement for him? Is what your thoughts or feelings about D. Melton?
It's tough because I'm not a huge David Roddy fan. I've watched him. I like what I hear. Like what I, you know, you can watch the video. But in terms of, you know, what I struggle with, what he's gonna be. You know, is he a 250-60-pound shooting guard? Is he going to be, you know, want to be Draymond Green in the league, just a little better skilled offensively, just, you know, with that size, with I realize there's some athleticism there. He's a former quarterback, but I just wonder what's the position. Whereas with Laravia, I just think it's a little bit more clear. Here's where I'm at though. It feels like, if there is no feels like to it, Memphis gave DeAnthony Melton that opportunity, for two straight years to shine both in the regular season and then come when they really needed him playoff time. And it was almost like, no, we're gonna hold on to him until we know. And that's what almost like last year's playoffs, it felt like to me, were that. It was sort of a baseline where you got a chance again. It was to find out, what you are and what guys are going to be in the most important time is the playoffs. And listen, DeAnthony, one of my favorites, man. I still got the picture of him when I told Chris he got traded. Chris didn't like it at all because we got pictures of him. We got DeAnthony's autograph. Great Grizzly dude, always smiling. And again, during the regular season, man, doing it all. But it just felt like they had come to a point, that front office, Zach Kleiman, had come to a point where we know what he is. Right. And unfortunately, because he can't be a backup point guard, right, with the possibility of Tyus leaving, we're limited there. We see what, we see what he is, and we're ready to move off him. My only issue is, I'm not convinced David Roddy is going to be a guy that eventually ends up in your rotation. So it's unfortunate that that's the thing. But again, whether it's Roddy, whether it's Laravia, I have a high confidence level. I'll be real honest with you. And Kleiman, based on what he's done, it's hard not to. And so you figure, again, that at least one of these first-round guys will pan out. I have a harder time seeing it with Roddy just in terms of the kind of a tweener, but I'm hopeful that he will based on this front office's track record. Tough to see DeAnthony go. It just felt like it was sort of the end of the line. I question, could you have used him for something else? But we'll see with Roddy. Real eager to see what he's going to look like in summer league, and more importantly, where exactly Memphis plans to use him. Because hell, I've seen him listed as everything from combo forward to shooting guard. Right. He can be small ball, even be a small ball big man for you. So I'm eager to see what the Grizzlies' plans are for him, on the court rather than just talking.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity to watch Roddy at the combine, and he didn't look too well. He looked a little out of place. I think just to your point, Jason, because we don't know what position he plays. Like, this guy's 6'7", 260. You think that theoretically that would be a forward, but he looks like a guard to me, basically. He's just a real big
plays like guard.
Yeah. So it'll be amazing. It'll be great to see what he looks like in the coming weeks with summer league and see if he eventually would crack the rotation and how Taylor Jenkins and crew is going to utilize this guy. Just like you said, man, it was tough to see DeAnthony go. I just felt that these past two seasons where he wasn't playing as well as we thought or we would have liked for him to play in the playoffs. Because he went virtually in couldn't really find him at this point. And then it got to a point where it became unplayable. And right. Then given his size and not being able to slide in as a backup point guard, because we even talked about it years on, like it seems as though when he and Tyus is out there, those two were a nice little duo. But by him not being able to switch over and play the point guard position on top of him not having a great playoffs, not just this past playoffs, but not just these past two series with the Warriors and the Timberwolves, but even – with the first round series last season against the Jazz, it just got to a point in time. It's like, well, we can just slide somebody else there, give some of those extra minutes to Zaire or something. And yeah, it's tough to see him go, but man, I understand. I'll definitely say
that. I mean, there's a void in scoring punch off that bench now that's going to have to be answered for with him leaving, though. And again, I don't think Roddy's ready to come in and fill that off the bat. So whether it's adding a veteran or one of these other guys, that's because I don't think you just plug it up with John Conchar and you're good. So they've got questions there now that you, especially in the immediate with Melton gone.
Yeah. We got Danny Green now.
he tore his ACL.
Danny Green will not suit up for the Grizzlies this year.
He will not wear a Grizzlies uniform.
He will not wear a Grizzlies uniform this season.
Even if he's still on the roster, he won't. He tore his ACL, literally.
No, even if he's on the roster, but I'm telling you, he will not be wearing a Grizzlies uniform. Get ready.
But this even stands back to 3 years, the bubble. Those essentially 8 playoff games, and Melton didn't show up then either. So really, it goes 3 years in a row when Tyrese was out during the bubble, and Melton suited up backup point guard. So I think, you go, Jason.
I was just going to say, the Grizzlies gave him that chance again to sort of rebound this year. Kind of, Brandon Clark this year sort of falling out of the rotation, right? Mm-hmm. Last year jumps back in, and then in the playoffs proves, hey, I can still be this impact guy. And he's shown, given that next opportunity, that second opportunity, hey, I am a part of, here's how valuable I am. And unfortunately, Melton could have sort of followed a similar script, and it was just more of the same. If he had, maybe we're talking a different story here, but I think it's what you guys said. It's just sort of it's a combined number of things. Just for that front office, they said, I think we've reached the end of the road here.
Yeah. And the thing I respect about Kleiman is he does. When he loves players, he's going to go get them. Even going back, I kind of toned down all of us, including you, Jason. I remember none of us liked Triple J when he got picked. Most of us on the podcast, and I liked Zaire when he got picked. So this year, I took a different approach. When he picked up LaRavia, when he picked up Roddy, I was like, you know what? I've been wrong.
I know that was me last year.
I was okay with Zaire being picked. I just didn't like the Grizzlies moving up to
trading up. Exactly. That was
it. I thought he would have been there at 17. Exactly. To be honest with you, but
no, I thought the exact same thing and said it then. The only thing is, and I've had to apply it to apply it to this year, is that if LaRavia, if Roddy, if they pan out, it ain't gonna. In this case. Same thing with Zaire. It's not going to matter to us at all whether they got him at 19 or 29, quite frankly. That's the thing about it. And again, I've been saying you almost have to give that front office the benefit of the doubt just because of how successful they've been. It is such night and day difference from that previous front office where it was just how they going to screw this up. He has found so much value. And like you said, when he's moved up, he's hit on his man. And so – man, I'm like you, Shark. I've had to take a different approach this year because that was me last year saying they had reached on Zaire. And here I see this young kid contributing in the playoffs, knocking down fourth quarter three-pointers. Hell, I didn't see that this time. And so, again, how can I sit up here and tell you LaRavia ain't going to be ready for it when plugged in this year, that there's no way Roddy can make it? No, we're going to sit back and see and give these guys the benefit of the doubt, at least early on.
I think from a player's perspective, too, like to see a team trade up for you, it kind of boosts your confidence and within the organization, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. No. It has to.
Yep, for sure. And then you get to the second round where you trade where a player who's dropping, mostly probably because of his height, who's from the city, who had a great year at the University of Tennessee, you decide to trade back in and get him really at a great value at pick number 38. So what y'all thought, just like how excited were y'all for the Kennedy Chandler pick, especially getting him in the second round?
Listen, I felt awful watching Kennedy Chandler slide. And so when finally the Grizzlies made the trade to come up and get him, I can't help but for as a guy who grew up rooting for Memphis products, it wasn't necessarily the ending to the story, and really this is just the beginning, that you'd put in your perfect little fairy tale. But it was nice that he can be in a place that number one knows him, knows the way he's come up, right, and values what they're getting in him, frankly. And again, for everything we're saying about value and where the Grizzlies got LaRavia and Roddy as well, It does seem like the Grizzlies made up a little bit, even if those guys, in terms of where you got Kennedy Chandler, again, the second round, a guy who at one time is mocked as a lottery guy, and then right before the draft, the late first rounder. But back to it, it's a great story because Kennedy Chandler's always had that chip on his shoulder, and it's going to stay there, frankly, being a second round pick. And that's a good thing, when you're as a fan of the Grizzlies or as media covering them, because Kenny Chandler with a chip on his shoulder is a Kenny Chandler that's driven and motivated, and one that you want to, frankly, you don't want to play against. I will never forget, we were talking about COVID earlier, going into that church 2 years ago, close to Germantown, and going into that gym and seeing Kennedy and Ja Morant going at it. Musa Cisse was in the building. It was a who's who. Campaign was in there at the time trying to rehabilitate his career. And I said it on the radio after we came out of it, coming away from watching it that weekend. Kenny Chandler was the dude that had impressed me the most. As high as Ja was jumping, and we were still just getting used to Ja's athleticism and everything else, and as many shots as Musa Cisse blocked, and at that time, people were still raving about him. Man, Kenny Chandler, his poise, the way he played versus Ja without fear, it stood out then. You've seen the bat. We've seen it in the mainstream since, and how well he's performed on the big stage. Just look at Tennessee in the SEC tournament and how great he was there. But just when you get a guy that's that driven, right, and really the only thing holding him back is size, I just think it's a great formula for the Grizzlies, who know that you're going to have to put a buffer in between him and this and the backup point guard job. I think a veteran of some sort, whether that's Tyus Jones or whatever, because Kenny's not ready for it now, but you give him a couple of years and I think there's a very good chance he will be. I love the story. I love the way this kid's been brought up, and I love the fact that he's still going to have the chip on his shoulder that's gotten him to this point. He is a dog, man. From the day he took Jalen Green's ball on the way to winning a Peach Jam title, then took it down the other end, dunked it. He doesn't care about what he's going against. Doesn't care who's on the other end. He's fearless. And again, there's going to be a way to, I think, for the Grizzlies eventually for him to see the court as Ja's backup point eventually. I loved that pick and particularly where they got him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be exciting to see him in South Haven this year playing with the Hustle. Absolutely. Definitely going to be looking to go to a couple of those games. Yeah. I don't really have any much to add to that. Jason pretty much took everything that I was going to mention about Kenny Chandler, the story that he's had being from the city. I watched that entire SEC tournament that he and the show that he put on for Tennessee to will them to the SEC title and, of course, eventually in the tournament. But yeah, in the end, man, it was a great value for Memphis to pick him up at 38. Again, I'm looking forward to Summer League. It is probably my favorite time of the year outside of the regular season in the playoffs. So it's going to be exciting to see what he brings to the table. I already know he's going to bring it. He has that chip on his shoulder, as Jason mentioned. And, man, I'm excited, man. July 7th can't get here any quick enough, man. I'm just excited.
That Summer League team should be a good one. I'm eager to see what Zaire and watch his development and mm-hmm. and can he sort of use that same model that Bane, you know, the Grizzlies used with him.
I'm expecting Zaire to drop 30 his first game and then he doesn't play another Summer League. Yep. That's exactly what I'm expecting.
I hope so, man. Because I tell you what, I know the numbers weren't there all year, but man, Zaire impressed me, and guys, I know Kleiman's mentioned using him at the two. I've always seen him as maybe the replacement for Dylan Brooks eventually as the three. Whatever it's going to be, though, I feel a lot better about him, especially after those playoffs, than I did certainly when the Grizzlies took him. But yeah, man, there is a concern in the back of your mind that sooner or later, though, man, Kleiman's got to miss on one of these guys, right? One or more with as high as that hitting percentage is right now.
Right, man. When you draft four of them in one draft, hey, you can afford to miss out of four.
Exactly.
Hopefully there's a gem in the mix, though. At least one, hopefully. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. And speaking of Bane, Vince Williams, if y'all remember when we drafted Bane, we all saw a video of him hitting like 40 threes in a row. Well, a video of Vince Williams came out of him hitting about 20, 30 threes in a row. So how do y'all feel about the final? I didn't think too much of the pick when you first got drafted until I saw the video. So what's y'all thoughts about Vince Williams and his shooting that he brings?
I will defer to you, gentlemen, because if this brother
– I hadn't watched VCU. I hadn't watched Vince Williams. I have no idea. To Sharky's point – until video. I saw the video of him hitting those threes, I had no idea. Again, we'll see how he looks in Summer all League. Right. If he's good enough to be on the Hustle roster, we'll see him in South Haven. That's all I can tell you on Vince Williams. I'm sorry.
Yep. And one last question. Free agency coming up. What is one, I guess, a bold prediction? It's not really bold. What prediction do you think the Grizzlies make? Or what do you, what's the prediction you think they'll do? Either resign Tyus?
Well, I mean, what I hope happens, Shark, is that they get Tyus Jones back. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be real honest with you. I hope that happens for you because, again, a backup point guard, but he also helps you. We talked about with that DeLon, with our man's De'Anthony Melton's, with that void left there from a scoring standpoint. So he helps you there. You're gonna have to put something else with him though. If you can keep him, right? If you can keep him, and the market's gonna dictate that. That's it. If you cannot retain Tyus Jones, like I said, if it's somebody that can help in both areas, play a little bit of point for you, play with Ja, right? Play a little bit of point on that backup point guard, maybe shift over to shooting guard. Listen, I know it's not a name that's really that's thrown out there a ton just because it ain't sexy. And last year, the Atlanta Hawks didn't use him much. But DeLon White is 6'5". And the dude has shown since he left Memphis, I think it's been around 37% from three. He couldn't hit the side of a barn when he was a Grizzly. but he did do a little bit of everything else. He's improved that shooting percentage to the point that, okay, it's credible, and you have to – he keeps defenses honest. But my point, at 6'5", you can play him with Ja. He could be a little – he could lean point guard for you with that second unit, provide a little bit of scoring. And I just think, frankly, with as little as he played with the Hawks last year, I want to tell you, he's still young, too, like only 30. I don't have his age in front of me right now, but the little bit he played with the Hawks, it's almost like you preserved a year there. You can get him cheap. And I'm not saying there aren't, you know, better answers for more, but if you're looking for a cheap alternative, I just think a guy like DeLon Wright, who, you know, has been here when he played against the Grizzlies last year, he shined even, you know, for the limited opportunity he got with the Hawks, he played well against Memphis. Because he can shoot the ball and has proven it since he left here, I just put DeLon Wright out there. If Memphis, again, cannot retain the Tyus Jones, maybe even if they can with that, 17 to 20 million, maybe there's a way you can work it out, and DeLon is helping you from that De'Anthony Melton, providing a little bit of scoring punch off the bench. There are other guys out there. I can tell you a wish list of the big name free agents, but I just don't end up thinking that's the way the Grizzlies are going to go this offseason.
Oh man, bold prediction. Well, my bold prediction kind of came true, but just kind of halfway, because I did say a couple of shows ago that the Grizz will find their backup point in the draft, and because I didn't think that Tyus Jones was coming back. However, I don't feel that Kenny Chandler is ready to step into their role as of yet. So, with that being said, I will change it, and I do think that Tyus will be back with the Grizzlies next season.
I hope so. I hope you're right.
I think them trading De'Anthony Melton kind of freed up some space so they can do that. I think that was a give out. Like, as soon as you traded Melton, I'm like, Ty's coming back. Cool.
That's it. I mean, it did. It gave you enough money. And like we said, the Knicks are going to get their, you know, the rumblings are they'll get their man in Brunson. I know that it's the next tier down. But like I said, hopefully that's one of the teams that maybe if they had missed on Brunson would have been interested in Ty's, takes them off the board. And hopefully, like I said, with that extra money, you can bring Tyus back on a team-friendly deal. Probably for him, a short one or two, I'm thinking, because he'll want to get back out there, obviously, and maximize. But it's been such a good thing for both sides, and you get the feeling like, you know, Tyus understands that, you know, again, on a short term, hopefully the 20 for two, whatever it is, hopefully there's a way to get that done.
Yep, and plus they drafted replacements for Slow-Mo, so that means Slow-Mo would be gone. That frees up even more money.
Slow-Mo's gone.
Kyle's gone. Yep. Yeah, so, you can pretty much book that.
It's a sad day for me, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You and Sheedy. Shout out to Sheedy, who's also a big Kyle Anderson fan also. So.
Hey, Team LaRavia from here on out. But, yeah, I agree with y'all with Tyus. I think he is back now. They pretty much, the decision makers they made pretty much guaranteed that DeLon Wright is an interesting choice because of he was even good that year, the half a year with the Grizzlies outside of shooting. He was like, say,
yeah, absolutely. He was great.
Yeah, I think he can do a little bit of everything for you. Again, it's lower down the totem pole, but man, you talk about getting somebody on a good contract. You know, Dennis Schroeder, I saw that thrown about. I think the CA had that name out there as well. You know, I would lean more towards one of those younger guys than maybe a Rondo or a Dragic. again, this is assuming, this is saying if you don't keep Tyus, but again, I'm just looking at a guy who can play some point, but also be a scorer for you on that second unit. You're going to need it with DeAnthony gone.
Yeah. Can you put together an all-time Grizz team real quick?
Ooh. Gotta do it for CD.
I wonder how many of the current
guys. You know we have to do that, sir. Come on now.
Gotta do it for CD.
Gotta do it for CD, yeah.
All-time Grizzlies team?
Yeah, who would you start at point, shooting, small forward, power forward, center?
Man, and how many of these current guys? Okay. I mean, the point guard is easy. I'm putting Ja there. I don't know. You know, Mike Conley, I'm sorry. But that one's
I'm with you. I'm with
you.
We're
with you there. So you don't feel sorry. We're all with you there.
That one's easy for that. Mike Miller or Desmond Bain? My partner would want me to put Mike Miller, so I'm not gonna do it. I'm putting Desmond Bain at the two. We get enough Mike Miller representation from 11 to 2 on the Jason and John show, as you know. So no, we're going with Desmond Bain. We feel like the ceiling is higher on that young brother. That's what I'm going with. All right. And that's my story. I'm sticking to it. I think, man, on the small, I gotta go Memphis Grizzlies? Can I put Sharif there and then put Z-Bo?
Yeah, you want to put Sharif?
Just to kind of go a little old.
Hey, that's a guy doesn't get as much love as he should, because that man Sharif Abdul-Rahim at the
Sharif Abdul-Rahim. Oh, man, yes. They tried him when they got in Memphis.
Yeah.
Z-Bo at the four, of course, and I gotta go with Gasol at the five.
Which Gasol?
The power we had was soft. That Kobe paid dude, but I don't want that power. I'm gonna get Mark, and I was ready for the Grizzlies to push the button and start over. But maybe before some others were, and part of my, you know, Mark would get caught in my line of fire sometimes. But don't get me wrong, had a great respect for that dude, man. Especially, man, when next to Z-Bo, like those two together, and so yeah. Wish Gasol. No, Mark, brother.
We had to clarify.
Mark, Z-Bo, Sharif, Abdul-Rahim, Desmond Bain, and Ja Morant. That's gonna be my five.
Nice, I like it.
Yeah, it's very, very out the box because you know most people have missed the first team all defense. So yeah, very out the box. Thank you.
Look different.
I like it, but yeah, this ends it, man. Thank you, Jason. Like it was a pleasure, Ryan. Thank you for.
No, man. Thank you guys. Appreciate you guys having me. And like I said, no, man. Anything I can do for you guys in the future, let me know. Anytime I can come back, man. I'd love to. And y'all just let me know. Really, really, really enjoyed it, guys.
For sure. You know, like our other podcast called Let's Be Real, and you say Let's
Be
Real.
We got to get on Let's Be Real because we just got to open it up.
On the show.
We can chop it up like this, just talking Grizz basketball. Let's Be Real.
I'm down. I'll get me a little studio like Shark back there. Give me a little. Nice get that thing. We'll get it ready.
For sure. Man, let people know where they can follow you at.
Can follow me on Twitter at JasonSmith929. But that's Instagram as well, JasonSmith929. Listen to us hopefully from Monday through Friday on 92.9 FM ESPN on the Jason and John show. Man, I really appreciate you brothers letting me do that and having me on tonight, man.
No doubt, man, exactly.
But y'all keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Can't stop, don't stop. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's it.
Hey. Right. And as always, y'all know y'all can follow us at the Starting Five, Number Five MEM, by the Grizzly Bear Blues at SBN Grizzlies, and listen to other podcasts on the network, GBB Live and the Court and 3&D. And remember to follow me on Twitter at @the_PSharp.
Yeah, and just remember we're no longer melting, so follow my fellow wingmate Skyler @_Skylito. And of course, I'm @TheArtOfTrevor. First letter of each word is capitalized except of, because of is a preposition. So.
Hey, it's your man, @TamShakir. Appreciate y'all for listening. Jason, appreciate you, man.
Pleasure, Jim. Y'all take
and
care.
Again, follow our fifth guy, Sheedy, at It's Really Sheedy.
It's Really Sheedy.
That's him. Go Grizz.
Go Grizz.